Iconic wrestling coach Dan Gable once said, "Pain is nothing compared to what it feels like to quit. Give everything you've got today, for tomorrow may never come." Gable could be describing those whose achievements have earned them the honor of being inducted into the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. We're back with the second episode of the Mark Chiarella Story. Etched in stone are the stories of wrestling's legends and takes you inside the 179 National Wrestling Hall of Fame distinguished members as they share their never-before-told stories about their trials, tribulations, and triumphs. I'm Hall of Fame wrestling writer, broadcaster, and announcer Jason Bryant. Today, we continue our story of three-time NCAA champion Mark Chiarella from the University of Michigan. For Mark Chiarella, his successful high school career caught the attention of top college wrestling programs around the country. And while it wasn't apparent to anyone but him, the only place he was planning on going was to Ann Arbor and the University of Michigan. Even today, college recruiting pitches can be colorful. Even without the instantaneous technology and communications that we have today, coaches will still try to talk the athlete into believing that their option, where they coach, is the best choice.
And I started getting letters. And the funny thing for me was is that I already knew where I was going. I mean, I wasn't going to play point guard, but I was going to wrestle there.
Mark had a good high school career, but after winning just one state title, could he win three NCAA championships?
And that's kind of the epiphany I had, that I can win this thing. You're not planning on winning it three times, because winning anything like that three times, or the guys that have won it four times, you got to be a combination of good, healthy, and lucky.
I remember walking on the floor before the match, and I said good luck to Mark, and his eyes were glazed, and he was, I don't even know if he even knew it was me. I just thought, he's got that look. He worked his tail off to get where he got, and that's why he had so much respect from his teammates, from everybody that knew how he did it and how he lived his life.
I don't know if I know anybody that's mentally tougher than Mark. He hates to lose. He hates to lose at anything. You look him in the eye, if you're ever competing against him, you don't want him.
Most of the great champions that he wrestled took a brutal beating from him with his leg attack on top in parterre. You know, the guillotine, the power half, you know, the crossface Turk, banana splits, all that stuff.
As we learned in the first part of our story, Mark Chiarella began wrestling by happenstance and then embraced the sport with unmatched grit and determination. The Farmingham, Michigan native kept copious notes from wrestling camps and was so determined to be his best in everything. Competing in football, weighing about 100 pounds lighter than most offensive linemen, he became Michigan's best football guard. As a senior, he finally won an elusive state title, the school's second ever. With the attention of college coaches, Chiarella's high school records combined with his placement at the USWF Freestyle Nationals demonstrated his ability to compete at the collegiate level. Now, it was decision time, and the journey to his final destination was, well, pretty interesting, depending on whose viewpoint you're looking through.
You know, back then the recruiting process was, if you got a letter, it was a big deal. And I started getting letters. And the funny thing for me was is that I already knew where I was going. I mean, I wasn't going to play point guard, but I was going to wrestle there. And that decision to wrestle at Michigan didn't really come from, well, I really wanted to play basketball at Michigan. It came from watching a wrestling match. And I can't recall whether it was my sophomore or junior year when I was in high school, but Michigan was ranked number one in the country, and Michigan State was number two. And they had a great team, Michigan State did, and Michigan did as well. And I went to watch the match at Jennison Fieldhouse at Michigan State University, and there was standing room only. So the place held maybe 8,000 people, 9,000 people, and it was really quite the environment. And I watched a couple of the matches, the start of these matches, and I just liked everything about the Michigan team.
The decision, though, wasn't without some drama. Michigan State would make a pitch, but Mark had the maize and blue on the brain. His initial athletic dream was to be that starting point guard for Michigan's basketball team. So the passion for the Wolverines ran deep.
You know, the opposite of that is my coach, high school coach, went to Michigan State. He was a national champion there. He walked me around the campus. You know, he has a real strong affinity for that. I just didn't catch the vibe. You know, so I really knew after watching that match, I'm going to Michigan, period.
As luck would have it, Michigan State was snake bitten with that recruiting class. Remember that young stud from Ohio with the piercing green eyes, Lee Kemp? He badly wanted to go to Michigan State. But as the legend goes, Michigan State offered Kemp a scholarship after the official signing date, whereas Wisconsin, another top program in the Big Ten, had offered Kemp a scholarship earlier. Perhaps the course of wrestling's history could have changed if both Mark Chiarella and Lee Kemp would have both ended up in East Lansing. Woulda, shoulda, coulda, but didn't. So how did Chiarella react to the recruiting rigmarole?
And so the recruiting process became kind of comical, you know, at that point, because you had characters, you know, back in that day. Probably the one that was the most pronounced was Stan Abel from Oklahoma, University of Oklahoma. And he made a home visit at our place, and he kept telling me I could go to the land of milk and honey. And this is, you know, the promised land is University of Oklahoma. And, you know, here's all the champions that we have. And Oklahoma beat Michigan for the national championship. Because their heavyweight, Gary Ernst, ended up getting beat in the finals, and that's all it took for Oklahoma to win it. So he's telling me, why would you go to Michigan? You know, we beat them for the national championship. And I was like, you know, when he left, I said to my dad, would we buy cars from this guy? You know, he was just selling everything. The only one I ever made a visit to was Joe Boone at University of Tennessee. He was old Okie too. And Joe Boone had said to me that, you know, you really need to come to Tennessee. You really, and I was just like, no, it makes no sense. I thought it was courteous to tell people no. I mean, if you know, no. And he finally gave me this deal. He said, we really want you to come down and we want you to see the Elton John concert. And I was like, I'm not even that into Elton John. But I said, you know, I'm not going there. He says, well, we don't know that until you get here. So I went down there and I saw Elton John. I worked out in the room, which I don't think you were supposed to do at the time. I wrestled two of his best wrestlers and beat both of them well. And, you know, told him thanks for the trip. Concert was nice. I'm going home. And that was it.
So while Chiarella didn't catch the flight with Benny and the Jets to Knoxville or drink elderberry wine in Norman, there was added pressure when his overall wrestling inspiration, Dan Gable, came calling. It was difficult to resist the interest from Iowa, which by that time had emerged as a national power. Gable was set to take the reins from Coach Gary Kertelmeyer, who had led the Hawkeyes to the NCAA Division I championship in 1975. The Hawkeyes would repeat in 1976, and in 1977, it would be Gable's team. But as you know by now, Chiarella waved goodbye to that Hawkeyes' yellow brick road.
But I got letters from Iowa, from Iowa State. Dan Gable came to watch me wrestle, which was like a big deal, you know, at a high school tournament, sat with me in the stands. You know, again, that's a big thing. You know, I admired Dan Gable. What Dan didn't know is my high school coaches tell me, oh, you could beat Gable. you can beat Gable. So I've watched him before. And I'm like, yeah, well, I went and, you know, there was a time, you know, that Dan would go out there and he'd work out with anybody who wanted to work out with him. And that was the year that I wrestled Lee in the finals. And I was one of the kids that jumped in there. And sure enough, got to wrestle Dan Gable. And guess what? My high school coach was wrong. I was not going to beat Dan Gable. Not that day.
The second assistant coach at Michigan was Bill Johannesson. According to Chiarella, Michigan had a practice of promoting from the inside, meaning when one coach would retire or leave, it would simply promote an existing assistant to the head job. After legendary coach and wrestling innovator Cliff Keen retired after 45 years, Rick Bay took over. Johannesson moved from second assistant to head assistant, and that was the staff for the first 3 years of Chiarella's college career. After a stint as the head wrestling coach, Bay had had enough of coaching and set out to do bigger things. First starting out with an administrative role at the school's University Foundation. Breaking form, Michigan hired from the outside, settling on Dale Barr, a three-time All-American and a past NCAA champion from Iowa State. While a very good student in high school academically, Chiarella wasn't quite sure what he wanted to be when he grew up, so he decided to major in something that gave him some options.
I was in the School of the Liberal Arts it's called LSNA, Liberal Arts and Science, and I got a degree in what they called Bachelor of General Studies, BGS. And the BGS degree was actually designed for people that wanted to go like to med school, that you could get a concentration on more than one thing as a major. For me, it was a pathway to graduate, which was different. So when they ask me, and I say this proudly, you know, that I'm a graduate of the University of Michigan. I worked very hard to graduate from the University of Michigan, but I graduated in the part of the class that made the top of the half or the top of the class possible. You know, without me, there's no top of the class, because you need people that are in the middle and the lower range of that class in order to have those valedictorians. You know, how do you get them without me?
Mark's life focus was wrestling, and that continued at Michigan, but he did solidify a relationship with the most influential person in his life, his future wife and best friend, Leslie.
So Leslie and I met when we were 12, and we started dating when we were 16, and we were married at 20, which was the start of my junior year in college. And people think, well, no, you had to get married. No, I just wanted to get married to her. She was the one. It made sense. And my dad was one that pushed it. He says, when are you going to marry this girl? I said, well, I guess I can marry her anytime. He said, it'd be a good idea then. So I just got married. And, you know, she's not just my best friend. She's like the one that I count on all the time. She always has been. And so she's kind of been, you know, we've been together forever. You know, we've been married 42 years, but we've known each other for so long that we just don't remember much of life without each other. And it's been a great thing.
When you look at what Mark accomplished in college, the saying, behind every great man is a woman, yeah, that comes to mind. Being married afforded Mark a natural barrier from the trials and tribulations that came with dating in college. Same with the social scene that a dynamically large school like Michigan can present, things that often contribute in derailing promising wrestling careers.
My social life is pretty restrictive. You know, I just I'm a very private and kind of laid back person with this. And, you know, my college experience is not the college experience that most people have. You know, I guess I was an older soul to begin with.
How good of a wrestling wife was Leslie? Even those close to Chiarella knew how important she was, like former teammate Mark Johnson.
She was very supportive, always around her parents. Mark's parents, and I thought it was just awesome. It was just who they were and who Mark was. You know, we didn't ask him to go out with us because he didn't. That wasn't him. He didn't do those types of, you know, not that he didn't have fun, but his fun was with Leslie, being focused, getting through school, and being the best wrestler he could. But she was certainly a big part of it and around an awful lot.
Chiarella would do his best Monty Hall impression, playing Let's Make a Deal with his wife, Leslie.
You know, I told her that, you know, she knew what she was buying into. I mean, it was really clear. When you are, it doesn't matter if you're a competitive athlete in wrestling or any sport, if you want to be the best, if you want to compete at the national or international level and win national and world championships, you are going to be extremely selfish. It's like the most selfish time in your life because it's all about you. Hey, Pat, how are you feeling today? Are you hurt today? Is everything good with you today? It's all about you. And you suck it up because you're like, yeah, you know, I'm not feeling good today. Well, we got to get you feeling good today because we need you this week. So it becomes that really selfish time. And I told her, I said, you know, when I'm done, I'm done. And it will never be about me once I'm done.
When we come back, Mark flirts with winning 4 NCAA titles, but he had to use losing to learn how to win.
Yeah, I lost every year. I was the guy that had losses and just figured out how to win.
Now a word from one of wrestling's legends.
This is Lee Kemp, a distinguished member inducted into the National Wrestling Hall of Fame in 1990. And you are listening to Etched in Stone, Stories of Wrestling's Legends, a series about wrestlers produced by wrestlers. These stories are thorough, entertaining, and compelling, with an engrossing narrative that will transform your understanding of the legend. A new episode of Etched in Stone launches every Tuesday. Don't miss a single episode, as the National Wrestling Hall of Fame and USA Wrestling bring these stories to life. To take a deeper dive into these athletes' lives and download a complimentary storybook of all distinguished member stories, go to nwhof.org or make a visit to the National Wrestling Hall of Fame in Stillwater, Ohio.
While he won a considerable amount of the time, Chiarella wasn't what you'd call an instant success. wrestling at 150 pounds. He lost 6 times as a freshman before qualifying for the NCAA tournament in Tucson as the number 6 seed. At those championships, he pinned his first 2 opponents before running into the 3rd seed and the incredibly physical Roy Oliver of Arizona State. He lost to Oliver 10-3, but then would win 3 wrestleback matches before beating 142-pound NCAA champion from the year prior, Jim Bennett of Yale, 10-3 for 3rd place. Chiarella finished his freshman campaign with a 35-7 record.
When I came to the realization that I should have won this thing and not taken 3rd, is when I watched, I know it was Chuck Yaglo that won, but my history with Chuck was I wrestled Chuck my freshman year. He was a senior, and I wrestled him in the quarterfinals of the Midlands and beat him. And I was just like the freshman guy that just shows up there. And then I got beat in the semis by Mike Frick from Lehigh, who was wrestling up. You know, it was just a crazy thing. And then I wrestled back against Chuck Yaglo and lose to him. And then proceeded to lose to Chuck in the Big Ten Finals. So, you know, I had history with that, but I knew I could beat him because I already did beat him. And when I saw him in the finals, I was like, geez, I should be here. I can beat this guy.
Following his first NCAA tournament experience, there was a vision coming into focus. 3 titles were within his grasp. Chiarella stepped up his game, but it would not be an easy ride.
And that's kind of the epiphany I had, that I can win this thing. Yeah, you're not planning on winning it 3 times, because winning anything like that 3 times, or the guys that have won it 4 times, you got to be a combination of good, healthy, and lucky. I'm a firm believer in that. You know, if those stars don't line up, you can be the best wrestler ever. Randy Lewis is an example. He dislocates his elbow. That's an injury you don't come back from fast. But he tapes it up, and he wrestles with one arm. He's All-Americans, but he's not the national champion. So, you know, absent that happening to him, he's a national champion again. So it's a combination of those things. And that's what I walked away from that year, saying to myself, I can do this. I just got to go after it.
With those goals in mind, Chiarella still had slips along the way.
Oh, yeah, I lost every year. I was the guy that, had losses and just figured out how to win. And I learned from the losses. I mean, so that was something that worked for me. It's not like I lost a lot, but I had losses every year. Something happened. You know, my sophomore year, when I ended up winning my first title, I had a couple losses. But the difference was that I wrestled the same at the national tournament that I wrestled everywhere else. And, you know, even to this day, I'll go to the national tournament. I'll watch a guy and the poor kid just puckers up. And he's just not wrestling the same, and he's not taking the same risks. I did all the stuff the same. And, you know, once you believe that you don't get tired, you're very dangerous out there. And I just didn't get tired.
Bob Chiarella did everything to support his son's run. He was always on the lookout for wrestlers to challenge Mark. One of those, Mike Abrams, would push Mark for the rest of his career, spending at times as much as 2 weeks at a time in the Michigan wrestling room. At Grand Valley State, Abrams won the NCAA Division II championship in 1979 and would later place 6th at the Division I tournament in an era where Division II and Division III wrestlers could wrestle their way into the Division I tournament. Abrams remembers those days well and the relationship that developed.
Yeah, his dad was the one that I would say keyed in on it, because after we started working out together, his dad would drive up and pick me up and take me down to Farmington to work out with Mark.
Now a sophomore, Chiarella was again seeded 6th going into the 1977 NCAA tournament in Oklahoma City. He easily got to the semifinals before defeating top-seeded Paul Martin from Oklahoma State 9-7. He had an easier time in the finals, beating the number 2 seed, Joe Zuspan from Iowa State, 9-3. Here's teammate Mark Johnson.
I really didn't consider Mark Chiarella the underdog. I thought he would win the Nationals. He beat Yagla, as a true freshman, defending national champion. I just thought Chiarella had it all. And I just knew that when he got that focus, there were just very few people capable of beating him. And I really didn't think, and of course I knew Martin and Oklahoma State, but I just didn't think it was a big upset.
During his junior year, the 1978 NCAA tournament was out east in College Park, Maryland. Chiarella was seated first and went unchallenged, beating future World Olympic champion Dave Schultz, then wrestling for Oklahoma State, in the semifinals before pinning one of Dan Gable's wrestlers, Iowa's Bruce Kinzeth, to win his second title. But before any of those championship accolades came down on Chiarella, there was another potential run-in looming with Lee Kemp, who by this time already had a pair of NCAA titles of his own. They were both wrestling at 158 pounds, and to chart their course through wrestling history, only one of them could be a three-time champion.
It was finally about time that I was going to wrestle Mark. He's at 50, and I'm at 58, and we kind of cruise. He stayed at 50 for two years. So now he's at 58, beginning of the year, 58. I think that if you really wanted to wrestle me, you should have entered the Northern Open. Because at one point, Coach Dwayne was thinking, well, be prepared that Chiarella might enter the Northern Open just to test you to see where you're at. Now we have the dual meet with Michigan. And that was at the end of the year, too. And I'm thinking, man, I would have rather wrestled him earlier so that I could have adjusted and whatever. But now it's at the end. I think it was like the week before the Big Ten tournament. It was the last duel before the national tournament. And I'm like, well, and this is one of those coaching things where Dwayne kind of allowed me to, I said, Coach, I don't think it's in my best interest to wrestle Mark now. And he's looking at me like, man, you wrestled Gable and everybody. Why don't you? I said, because it's at this point, man. I said, what if he beats me, man? He's going to be at 58 now. I'm going to have to wrestle him Big Ten and national. I said, you know, I'm not afraid to wrestle him, but I want to be a three-time national. It was only about being a three-time national champion. So if he enters the Big Ten tournament at 58, now we're going to throw down. Let's see what happens.
So Kemp didn't take the chance in the duel. It was at Michigan. He weighed in at 167 pounds. We would have to wait until the Big Ten tournament to see if this showdown would actually occur.
Dale Barr was pretty open about it, actually. He came and told me. He said, Kemp, I'll tell you what I told Mark. He said, only one of you is going to be a three-time national champion. Just remember that. Whatever decision you make, just think of that.
They both thought about it. Mark Chiarella cut to 150 pounds for the Big Ten tournament, and both finished their careers with three NCAA titles. During Chiarella's senior year, he entered the NCAA tournament as the top seed, but at a much more comfortable weight of 167 pounds. The championships were held that year in Ames, Iowa, and Chiarella had three falls, including one in the finals, on the way to his third NCAA title. He was also selected the outstanding wrestler of the tournament. In those finals, he would again pin a Hawkeye, just like the year before, this time beating Mike Deanna to win gold. But to say the weight was comfortable might not be exactly true. 2 weeks prior at the Big Ten Finals, Chiarella had lost to Deanna in a wild overtime match that went to the extra period tied at 14. When we got to Ames for the NCAA championships, Dave Powell of the host Cyclones had Chiarella on the ropes in the semifinals. Here's Coach Dale Barr.
With 30 seconds to go in the match, Dave is up 3 or 4 points on Mark. Really, with 30 seconds to go in the semifinal, Mark's down, let's say, 3 points. But Dave, normally, and most Iowa State guys are chop, get a wrist, and drive it, you know, and break you down. And this time, Powell threw in the legs. And, of course, Mark is a leg man from the word go. Probably one of the best leg men I've ever been around. And he hit down, which got Powell high on him, grabbed his head, reversed him, put him on his back for five, and wins the match. He had lost to Deanna in the Big Ten Finals. It was like 10-10, 16-14 in overtime. And he was dealing with some herpes on his arm and stuff, so he was a little bit run down physically.
That wasn't the case in Ames.
And he was ready to go, too. When he ran out of the tunnel and came over to the corner, you could just tell it was over. You know, he knew he had to get started early, and he couldn't let Deanna dictate the match. Anyway, he goes out there in the finals, takes Deanna down, lets him go, takes him down again, lets him go, takes him down a third time, puts him on his back, and pins him.
While he blossomed as the best wrestler in the country, Chiarella became known for his style and his relentless pressure on top. You didn't want to be on the bottom when going up against Mark Chiarella. When we come back, Chiarella transforms from mild-mannered off the mat to a ferocious, pain-seeking pinner on it. You're surely going to need some recovery time. But first, this word from USA Wrestling.
This is Rich Bender, Executive Director of USA Wrestling, and you are listening to Etched in Stone, Stories of Wrestling's Legends. The Etched in Stone series will enshrine forever the incredible stories of wrestling's greatest heroes and bring much-needed attention and relevancy to one of wrestling's greatest treasures, our National Wrestling Hall of Fame. The Etched in Stone series will launch a new episode every Tuesday, so don't miss a single podcast as the National Wrestling Hall of Fame and USA Wrestling bring these stories to life. USA Wrestling provides quality opportunities for its members to achieve both their full human and athletic potential and strives to be the world's best sports organization. Learn how to become a member of USA Wrestling and download a complimentary storybook of all these distinguished members at themat.com.
I guess the easiest way for maybe someone to understand it, or the analogy to it, would be, you know, there's people that can play the piano, they can play three notes, they can just hit one chord. But if you can play the whole board and you really understand it, there's a lot more to it than just executing a move, because there's a combination of things that have to happen. And so, you know, when somebody's playing the piano and they're playing both parts, it all comes together. And when I was on top of somebody, I got it. I understood those positions. I still do to this day. Getting on top, to me, wasn't any different than on my feet. And everybody thought, oh man, he was terrible on his feet. I was terrible because of percentages. In Michigan, they used to track this thing, your takedown percentage. The problem was, if you got taken down early in a match, like right away, you had like three takedowns to overcome that formula that they had. What he didn't take into consideration is I got taken down. I did a Granby. I reversed the guy for five because I near-falled him. I got back on top. I turned him over twice. And now I'm winning 10-2. But my takedown percentage is terrible. And then the second period, you know, I get away and I take him down. And then I'm trying to pin him or turn him over. But my takedown percentage is terrible. So, like, all of a sudden I have a terrible takedown percentage. But I was actually pretty decent on my feet. I wasn't, like, horrible. I got a lot of takedowns.
His style and tenacity earned Chiarella a then record 41 falls at the University of Michigan.
Pinned a lot, but you know, in the day, we didn't have technical falls, you know? So in the national tournament, I had matches that I had scored over 20 points. And you could say, well, you know, that guy couldn't have been very good. But I would point out, you know, if you got to score that many points and keep going, it's a lot easier to score, you know, 15 and be done than to score 28 or 26 and have to finish an 8-minute match. You know, that there is a difference. I'm not saying it's harder. I'm just saying it's different.
Right.
And so it was different.
Steve Frazier, an Olympic gold medalist in 1984 and longtime U.S. national Greco-Roman coach, developed his friendship with Mark Chiarella in the Michigan wrestling room and was one of the few wrestlers that competed with him, but it cost him in pain.
Well, the excruciating pain that you experience from Mark Chiarella being on top of you is hard to describe. It's very painful. That's why he was so effective. I mean, he turned all of the great champions with his leg attacks, and you know those great champions aren't going over if they don't have to go over. They're all tough. They're all, you know, they all can fight. They all got good defense. But Mark's techniques, when he got on top of you, he would destroy you. And basically the pain was lower back, neck, and shoulder pain, depending on what attack or what technique he was trying to turn you with, or the combination thereof, that you had no choice. You either went over or you risked, you know, getting your shoulder, what felt like getting your shoulder tore out.
There was a ferociousness to that tenacity and how Chiarella approached riding and pinning opponents.
If I take a look at my wrestling attitude, you know, they talk about flipping a switch. I could flip a switch, and I could do not bad things, but I just did all the stuff that I was capable of doing. And it was like, my job is to execute. Your job is to protect yourself. And if you can't protect yourself, you're in trouble. Now, I always qualify this with, of all the people I ever wrestled, I think I had one person that was actually injured. And I felt terrible about that, because being hurt is different than being injured. Larry Tusick, I can still remember, because it was a horrible thing. Southern Open, I cradled him, and I took him backwards. Instead of forwards, I took him backwards. And as soon as I took him backwards, his ankle just cracked. And I felt terrible about that, because I'm not out there to injure somebody. But I will hurt you. And there's a big difference there. From my feet, fireman's carry to his back, and I would pin from that. I had a near and a far side cradle. I had a power half. I had a guillotine. I had splits. I had an inside leg power half, which people never would do, and I used that a lot. I had like a combo platter of different things. I had a near wrist out to the head and then taking a guy over. So, you know, I look at wrestlers today that look to turn. It's almost like they're myopic. They have like one thing, and that one thing they're looking to do is all they do. And it's not like they start with something. You know, I could start with a near wrist, and my whole goal was to power half you on the opposite side, you know, or to get my leg in. And I think, you know, that whole philosophy, Doug Blueball once told me, and this was back when I had just stopped wrestling. He had told me, he says, you know, they don't know how to pin like we did. And I was like, well, I don't know what that really means, because I never really watched Doug wrestle. But I think I kind of get it today. You know, there was a different science to it. And there's a lot of things that are involved in that, with body positioning and how to execute things, that I don't see as much today, because it's more of a on-your-feet takedown game with a lot of these guys.
Those who witnessed Chiarella wrestle never forgot his domination on top, including Johnson, who, as far as size and physique goes, was one of wrestling's most impressive physical specimens.
I believe that he was the, you know, one of the, if not the greatest leg guy to pin and turn and hurt people. I saw multiple guys that the ref called pin, Pat, and they weren't even close to being pinned. I mean, I would say the way he put his legs on, and he would, you know, put the guillotine on, and he would, they'd be 3 or 4 inches from being pinned. And I remember the ref slapping the mat, and those kids walk up, they put their head down and walked out the mat. They didn't complain they weren't pinned. They were hurting so bad, I'm not sure they could even get pinned, but he was so torquing on their body and putting them in such pain. I just would keep going, holy cow.
There was just a killer instinct and a swagger, a confidence to Mark Chiarella.
I mean, he knew what he wanted. He had confidence, and he had what I like to call a killer instinct. He would smell the blood on, you know, not necessarily the real blood, but he would smell from his opponents when he had them on the ropes, and that would ignite him, it would seem like, where he would just all of a sudden grit his teeth, and he'd be like, you know, and he would try to, you know, twist you in half. And I think that's, you know, when I think about Mark Chiarella, that's what I think about, his tenacity about how he competed with his opponents. Nobody, he was afraid of nobody that I could see. No matter how good they were, he would go out there and just, you know, terrorize them. Most of the great champions that he wrestled took a brutal beating from him with his leg attack on top and parterre. You know, the guillotine, the power half, you know, the crossface Turk, banana splits, all that stuff.
The NCAA wrestling tournament began in 1928. As of 2019, 22,916 wrestlers have taken to the mats. Of those 22,000 plus, 601 have won at least one title at the NCAA's most prestigious division. 142 wrestlers ended their careers as two-time NCAA champions. 47 wrestlers were three-time champions, and just four are four-time champions. Chiarella finished with an impressive record of 132 wins to 13 defeats. He also had 41 falls. In addition to being named the outstanding wrestler, Chiarella won the 1977 Junior World Championships held in Las Vegas. Chiarella's career puts him in the discussion of one of wrestling's best ever. The only argument is how high on the list he goes. Mark Johnson agrees.
Mark Chiarella is one of the greatest NCAA wrestlers there's ever been. I mean, if you really have the talk about it, and you know, yeah, he lost a few times along the way, but he was so dominant when it really counted. Mark Chiarella was a different wrestler. His game went up, his intensity went up, his training went up. He just did everything right. Not that he didn't do everything right during the season, but he continued to make those steps all the time. He's just one of those guys that I truly believe if the Olympics would have been Cletus style, Mark Chiarella would be an Olympic champion. He was just that good in that style. He was so tenacious and tough on top, and you know, just everything about him was just winning.
His opponent and friend Mike Abrams sums up how Chiarella did it.
Going with Mark, wrestling with Mark, is that he never got tired. And that was the one thing that was the hardest hurdle for me to get over, because you could go with him for a little bit, but then the match is not going to be a little bit. You're going to wrestle for a while, and eventually no one could just, his conditioning just was unmatched on the mat. The conditioning, wrestling being a sport, that's one of the key things, that would always rise to the top with him, because he would just never get tired.
Following his illustrious career, Mark would give the Olympics a shot. But 163 pounds is the toughest weight class in the world, and freestyle wrestling was not his strength. He wasn't motivated to just hang around and starve, as the model dictated at the time. That just meant he would start a little earlier in the next phase of his life. But how does someone with as much success as Chiarella find a way to match the thrill he received from all the success he found in wrestling? Many wonder how athletes this successful adjust to life after. Join us in the next episode as Chiarella finds a way to top what he accomplished in college.
If you want to know what's the counter to something, don't get in it. And it's, you know, my analogy always was the boxing one. Guy's got a really strong right hand. He's going to come cross really hard, and he's going to hit you in the temple. You want to know the best counter to that is slip it. Don't let it hit you in the temple, because if it does, guess what? You're going out. Right. Or it's going to hurt really, really bad.
Right.
So learn that in wrestling.
Etched in Stone is an exclusive production of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame and USA Wrestling. Download your free souvenir book of the Mark Chiarella story or any of the Etched in Stone stories produced at nwhof.org. The storybook includes the written story and is filled with pictures and videos of their live matches. This will be the first of many storybooks produced about these legends. Start your collection now, and while you're on the website, take a deeper dive into the profiles of the 179 distinguished members inducted into the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. A new episode of Etched in Stone launches every Tuesday.